All right, welcome to our first attempt at a post-game The Independent Live podcast. Matt is a couple doors down from me in the Notre Dame press box, atop after Notre Dame's 17-14 loss to Ohio State. That, man, that had a lot of everything, not a little of everything. It felt like a night where I went into it thinking, like, am I going to be writing an oral history of this 10 years from now? I might. Matt, that was just a wild, incredible game. It's hard to make sense of it.
You cover a game like this, Pete, where it's so close, it's so tense. There are dozens of plays through the first through third quarters that you have circled as potential game-changing moments and penalties and you name it. And then you get a finish like that, which alone will probably take up this entire podcast, will probably take up every question we get from fans, will probably take up all the talk around this team, at least for this week. And if they lose to Duke for weeks on end, we went into this, first off, unbelievable atmosphere, loudest I've ever heard this place.
Yeah.
Awesome environment, like just a great, great college football scene. Like, everyone take a bow. This was great. The operations staff, everything about this was awesome. We went into this saying this was the biggest game here since the Bush push. And lo and behold, it ends on the final play from scrimmage in the same end zone on a controversial play that basically snatches defeat from the jaws of victory if you're Notre Dame. And it got worse and worse, I think, every time someone opened their mouth afterward. God bless them. It just makes less and less sense the more and more I look at it. And look, if you're a Notre Dame fan and you think everything's always the coach's fault, or you didn't like Marcus Freeman to begin with, or whatever it is, have at it. Like, there is no defense for what happened tonight if you're on Notre Dame sideline. It's just it's inexcusable. It's to have 10 men on the field on back-to-back plays, one coming out of a timeout on the two biggest plays of the game. I mean, Ryan Day can talk his talk all he wants. He was as fired up as I've ever seen a coach. Lou Holtz was absolutely right for 59 minutes, 57 seconds, and then Notre Dame just freaking gave the game away.
Yeah, no, I'm with it. I think there was the beginning of last season, we talked about, like, okay, when did the honeymoon end for Marcus Freeman? Was it Marshall? Was it Stanford? It was tonight. No. Tonight is when it ended. Because tonight was like a Bob Davey level coaching performance at the end of the game. You can talk about, imagine if that happened to Brian Kelly, and you could only imagine it because Brian Kelly would not have allowed that to happen.
If it was Tommy Rees, they were taking shots of him all day on game day. That never would have happened with him.
He
would have ran the clock out at the end,
It was just a failure of coaching at the end, whether that's Marcus Freeman, whether that's Al Golden, whether that's Al Washington, whether that's the missing Viper. Who knows if it was supposed to be Jordan Botello or whoever. But it was a failure of coaching of the highest order in the biggest moment of the season, when you had a chance to, this could have been a 10-year win for Notre Dame. Like, this is a win that carries your program for a long, long time, whether that is recruiting or donations or just sort of like national buzz about who you are. Never mind the fact that it carries you through this season where you're now a top five team. You have the best win in college football if you're Notre Dame. And instead, your head coach, who I think has been embraced by the fan base, is sort of kind of just laid bare, not having control of the situation at the most important time. That's it. For a head coach to not have 11 guys on the field on defense, two plays in a row, and then not be able to really explain it afterwards it's tough. It's hard to come back from that. This is kind of permanent record stuff, where this is going to come up after every loss in the Marcus Freeman era moving forward, where there's a question of coaching, for how good the game plan seemed to be. Like, he had them wired the right way. I thought defensively they played great for almost the entire game. Offensively, Jared Parker had a really rough night, which is kind of how 14 points looks. Those two fourth down calls were misses. So it was, man, it was it's a night that I think is going to stay with Marcus Freeman for a very long time. And I think it's a night that's going to stay with Notre Dame's fan base and its perception of Marcus Freeman for a very long time.
Just looking at everyone walking off the field, it was more shock than dejection just because, and look, we're me and you and everyone else covering this game to give listeners perspective and context. We're set up on the field after the game. We're in the end zone opposite where all the drama took place. So no depth perception, nothing. We're kind of going off the scoreboard and crowd feel as much as anything. And just the energy and vibes of that, like they're lining up for the last play. Ohio State freaking throws it on second and goal
third
from the one.
You have a third and 19 at the 22. That's
Ohio State play. Ohio State played every single bad stereotype we've ever had about that program night. They were so beatable. Like that's like the other thing. And I don't want to compare everything to past errors, but like say Kelly couldn't win the big one. Like he was never really in big ones. Like maybe Clemson 15, right? A close loss that they probably should have won or could have won. But like, Notre Dame looked like the better team on the field for 59 minutes, not by like a substantial amount, but it wasn't like, oh my God, they're going to do this. It's yeah, they're going to do this. They kind of shot themselves in the foot with a missed field goal. They were down 10-0. They righted the people see Lauren and, you know, people with their interpretation. I thought it was a hell of a football game. No turnovers on either side. Two really good defenses. Say it about Kyle McCord. He's a tough son of a bitch. He was under pressure all night and never really rattled. I think he got sacked just once. Hartman, too, for that purpose. But, I mean, I loved how both teams went for it on fourth down pretty much every time. I hated the play calls on every single fourth down call. Whether it was a rollout with Hartman on fourth and one, Ohio State throwing it from fourth and goal at the one when they had run the ball down to the one on consecutive plays, I believe. When Notre Dame stops Ohio State on the fourth down on Ohio State's penultimate drive, and like we're down there, I'm thinking the game's over at that point. You're thinking this is like when Marcus Freeman talks about us being an offense line, defense line program, this is where you prove that. You run the clock out with 4 minutes left or whatever it was. And calling a screen pass on second and 15, I just can't understand that. Freeman afterwards said, I told him playing, play to win, don't play just not to lose. I get that mentality. I don't understand that play call. It was almost picked off. Yeah, it was almost picked off. Yeah. Hartman wasn't bad. He wasn't great. I mean, for a guy who's the best quarterback you've had in 18 years, I wish they let him loose a little bit more, although I'm sure Ohio State's defense had a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's look at the box score. Marvin Harrison Jr., 3 catches, 32 yards. How the hell do you not beat that team? I mean, Henderson, 14 for 104, pretty much all on that 61-yard touchdown. That was a break. Yul Kyle McCord, 21 to 37. It was a very high-level football game. It was a great football game. Notre Dame dominated. They won time of possession by almost 10 minutes, which is significant. There's no excuse for them to lose this game and to get literally at the hands of the coaching staff. Cause that's it. Like you got 10 guys against 11. Yep. I don't care if it's a JV versus the varsity. I don't care what it is. And they still almost stopped him on that play. We were watching that replay. And we're still not sure. Was he down? Was he not? Looked like he was in, but I mean, my heart aches for the players who, let's say they run the table here. They go 11-1 and they get left out because their coaching staff put 10 players on the field for the two biggest plays of the season. I just cannot wrap my mind around that. I can't.
No, I can't either. Cause it's just, aside from just after the timeout and like the explanations from Freeman were just so unsatisfactory afterwards. Cause he was asked about like, well, do you run somebody on to take a penalty there? He's like, no, I don't want to get them settled. Like that doesn't make any sense. You're not giving up any territory. Like, you give up a half yard. I'd rather give up a half yard and put an extra 265 pounds of defensive linemen on the field in the exact spot where Ohio State wants to run the ball. So it's not, I don't put it on the 10 players on the field to figure it out. It's not fair to put that on JD Bertrand or Jack Kaiser or Howard Cross to be like, oh, we don't have any timeouts. I need to like, go off sides just to trigger the coaching staff to realize we only have 10 people here. That doesn't make any sense either. So it's that's really difficult. You know, on top of that, you've got Spencer Schrader missing a field goal that, you know, I would have bet quite a bit of money. Like during our live show, I think that people asked about the kicking game. I said, very confident when he takes the field. Like I thought that was going in, no question. And he missed it pretty badly, considering the distance. So it's just, you know, and I get it. Ohio State turned the ball over on downs too at the goal line. You know, when they went for it and they tried to get very finesse about it and got it shoved back in their face. So it, I realize Ohio State sort of has this like Ohio against the world vibe about it. They get some juice off of it, which doesn't really make a lot of sense to me when you have five-star recruits all over the place. Like what world are you actually against? I'm not sure.
I have family in Michigan. Let me tell you, every single person in the state of Michigan has a Detroit against the world pillow or shirt or something. It must be a Midwest thing. I don't know, but I guess it worked. They won. They could say whatever
nothing
they want.
Against
I
mean, the world doesn't roll off the tongue, I guess. I don't know. It's very strange.
They won. They could say whatever they want. But, I mean, I kid you not, especially after Notre Dame stops them on the penultimate drive, I'm sitting there thinking about, like, I'm thinking Notre Dame's won this game. I'm thinking about what I'm going to write and talk about. And I'm thinking, you know, good old Lou Holtz hasn't always covered himself in glory when a microphone's in front of his mouth in the last 3 years. Yeah. But boy,
did Brian Day get in line for being upset with something Lou Holtz said.
Boy, did he nail it yesterday. And
yeah,
he did nail it. Notre Dame wouldn't win. Like, he was right. He was right. I mean, you watch that Ohio State team, you think they're being Penn State or Michigan? Not unless Kyle McCord morphs into CJ Stroud over the next 2 months, which I don't, again, he played his ass off. Cade Stover is the toughest football player I think I've ever seen, as I'd expect someone named Cade Stover to be. But that guy, some of the catches he made, and he damn near broke his back in the Georgia game last year. Yep. He made him and Mitchell Evans. It was a great showcase.
Oh, my God. The one-handed tight ends Mitchell Evans made. Like,
and then it was, Stover made the helmet catch. I mean, it was like one top and the other.
It's like that's how crazy this – like, I feel like in most games, we could have spent 20 minutes on that one play, and I forgot it even happened.
Right.
It's wild.
It, you know, by the way, game day got announced. I saw Stanford Steve, a friend of the show, on the sideline when we're down there.
Yeah,
and I said, hey, are you going to Duke next week? He goes, yeah, I don't know if it's been announced yet. And I didn't want to spoil it. And I look and they literally just tweeted it. And again, this is when Notre Dame looks like they're about to win. I'm like, all right, great. I'm going to be another party for the Irish next week. And then it was just like, okay. And Duke, by the way, Riley Leonard is freaking awesome. And I know it's only UConn, but they won 41-7 with a garbage time touchdown by UConn today. Like Duke looks for real. This was not like, it's not a fluky Clemson win and whatever. Like that's a team Notre Dame needs to be on its P's and Q's for next week. But like, I think you'll learn a lot about this team moving forward, as you always do with a loss. But, you know, this is not the easiest schedule, as we know. Right. I mean, Louisville looks really good. That's in 2 weeks. Obviously, USC back here next month. You know, this was the start of a really tough stretch for Notre Dame. And to your point, I mean, just every opportunity in the world to make a statement win that will obviously carry through the season, but would carry so far beyond everyone here for the next decade or so. I mean, a second year head coach, he's going to have a new athletic director next year. Ryan Day, you could tell, had all the pressure in the world just based on the way he acted afterward. And again, he won. He could say whatever he wants. But like
this game almost could have put a gray hair in his goatee.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the play, it's just very, very frustrating to watch Notre Dame lose this game in the manner
they did. It's bizarre to me because, like, don't you come out of this thinking, like, more impressed with Notre Dame than you were coming into the game? And yet, the way it ended, it's just – it makes it all the more inexplicable. Like, they were the better team than Ohio State for 59 minutes. I agree with you, not by a lot. But it didn't feel like – to me, it didn't feel like the Georgia games –
no,
or the Clemson game in 2015, where you're like they're hanging on, like they're hanging in there, but like you didn't feel like they were as good as the team they were going against. Tonight they felt as good as the team they were going against, which is
better, Pete. They were up 14-10. I'm thinking, all right, they're going to win it. They should win it. They played like crap for a half. Like they dug themselves a hole completely of their own doing again, and they're going to win. Like second half, are you kidding me? Like I get like Ohio State. They've got a loaded roster. They've got a lot of highly recruited players on that team. Like any good to great team, you give them one shot too many, they're going to make you pay. And Notre Dame gave them just an opening with enough self-inflicted wounds that are just...
It's an opening the width of a defensive end.
Yeah, they could have used one. I mean, it's just very, very... I can only imagine... Again, it was a great environment. Great. Even, you know, the fans weren't booing Notre Dame at the end. They were clapping them. They realized they were, I think everyone in this building realized they were part of a special night. I can't tell you how many people, you know, we talked to from the Ohio State traveling party or their media or whomever who were like, holy cow, like, we know we hadn't been here in a while, but like, this place is electric. And yeah. I mean, it was awesome. It was an awesome atmosphere, an awesome environment. It was an awesome game between two really good football teams. It just sucks that it had to end that way due to a self-inflicted wound. Again, credit Ohio State. I mean, they made the play. You know, I did not think I thought for sure Notre Dame was either going to stop them or force a turnover. And DJ Brown dropped an interception on that drive too. Let's not forget that. And Ohio State had their opportunities to force some turnovers earlier in the game as well. But do I come away more or less impressed with Notre Dame than going into it? I mean, They kind of are who I thought they were. I thought they'd win a low scoring game tonight. They were in position to win a low scoring game tonight. They completely held in check the best wide receiver in the country. They got pressure on Kyle McCord. They defended the run well enough. They ran the ball the way they ran the ball in the second half. Again, like, I wouldn't say they completely abandoned the pass, but you know, that's go ahead drive, I believe, was a 97 yard drive where they ran the ball 10 out of 13 plays, if I'm not mistaken. One of the touchdown drives, they ran 10 out of 13.
Yeah, the first touchdown drive was 10 out of 13. The second one was 7 runs, 3 passes.
But that one started, I think, at their own 3.
The one that started at their 3 was the 10 runs, 13 passes. Yeah. Look, the first two touches were Jaden Greathouse. The last two runs were Jeremiah Love. The final catch for the touchdown was Rico Flores, freshman. So that's like another thing where you just like there's reason to be very optimistic about it. Like it,
right.
It's like you look at Notre Dame and think, all right, this is at least a 10 win team, but it's going to have to really scratch and claw to win 10. Cause now it's like,
now they are, you've got
Duke and Louisville. You're clearly better than both, but you know, it's on the road. Weird stuff happens. USC here. Can you outscore USC after tonight? Certainly feel a little differently about that. Going to Clemson. Clemson was better today than I would have expected, even in a loss.
Talk about a team that shot themselves in the foot.
Right. So it's just like, I feel like Notre Dame feels like it should be a 10-win team. It's going to have a hard time winning 10. And that, for the 1 year that you have a quarterback like Sam Hartman, is just got to – that would be incredibly disappointing if they weren't able to sort of right the ship after this. And this will be a difficult one to come back from, I think.
I don't say this like because I think this or to start anything. Do you think Sam Hartman was the best quarterback on the field tonight? Like, I think it's debatable.
I don't think it showed that way.
Right.
No. I mean, he's the best. He was the best quarterback in the game, but like the way the game played out. And I wasn't super impressed with McCord. I think the physical tools of Kyle McCord are very high end. You can see how he could develop into a future pro, but he's got a long way to go to get there. Hartman, the first scramble needed to be a first down. I know he was like where he got hit on the right sideline that got reviewed and then moved back. And then, you know, it ended up being a turnover on downs. Like, you just have to get that. And he was sort of sarcastic in his answer to a question about that afterwards. But like, I don't really know what to say about that. That's like, if Kyle McCord did that, we would chalk that up to youth. Sam Hartman did that, and we're just like, well, I'm not really sure what to make of it.
I didn't like the play call there. And then the second drive, the last two passes should have been picked. First one, he completely misfired on a pass to the right, number one on Ohio State. Was out of position to pick it, but it should have been picked. And the second pass, or the third down pass on that drive, that, which led to the missed field goal, was batted down at the line of scrimmage and should have been picked. I mean, again, McCord didn't like dazzle, but he made the play. I mean, it takes a lot of moxie, I think, to lead your team to a win like that on the road when nothing seems to be going right for you offensively. And to do it against
Notre Dame's defense. Throw on third and 19 is like, that's big time. That's a big time throw.
He took a lot of hits. He stayed in there. He was able to buy himself just enough time. And you saw tonight, like, you know, we've all had our questions of like, so you went from CJ Stroud, you went from Justin Fields and CJ Stroud to this, like, why didn't you go to the portal? Why don't you have anyone better? And, you know, from what I gathered in my loose reporting was, yeah, Devin Brown's probably better, but the guy seems way too careless with the ball behind the scenes, mm-hmm. and the staff just doesn't trust him. And this is a game where it's going to have a quarterback who's not going to make mistakes, because this was the game where whoever blinked first was going to lose. And unfortunately for Notre Dame, it was the coaching staff by putting 10 players on the field on the last two plays of the game.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Rollback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Rollback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Rollback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Rollback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Rollback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
We are taking some questions for the show. So we'll get into the first one, and I'm not sure who it's from, but it says, I want to know why Audric Estime did not get another carry after running it for a first down on the second to last drive. He was asking to be fed and was strong as he had been all day.
Good question.
I understand why you would look at the box score and see 14 carries for 70 yards and think like that's not enough Audric Estime. But Jeremiah Love averaged 7.1 yards per carry. Jadarian Price averaged 7.3. And Jabron Payne, for not being the best athlete of that group, has a hell of a knack for getting 2 yards on third and two or 1 yard on third and one. I track third down conversions by player, and Jabron Payne's third down conversions rate is like the highest on the team. So I actually understand why they did it. I thought, you know, for how much like some of the miscues from the offense tonight, I thought that the creativity in the run game was actually really good. You know, it wasn't just like outside zone, inside zone, outside zone, inside, like, you know, especially by trusting Jeremiah Love because he's a different style of runner. I thought they did some really good stuff. You know, Jadarian Price got outside, I think, to the right on his one big run. So, you know, it's like, look, if you had the ball at the end of the game, like if there had been a drive after Ohio State had scored, I think you would have seen Audric Estime take the lead in that drive, because that's when you are trying to finish somebody off with strength and power. But overall, I thought that the distribution of carries, while it might look weird on paper, I do understand where Jared Parker was going with it.
I got it, but it did seem weird not seeing him in there for extended stretches as well as the other guys were playing. Like, this is your bell cow. Again, you're an offensive line, defensive line team. Ohio State has basically shown you who they are all night. You get the ball back with 4 minutes left. This is when you just pound that guy up the middle.
Like, here's where they screwed that up, I think. The two fourth down calls.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's like you got too cute. One, trying to pass it in the first quarter on fourth down. I don't understand that, even though you do have Sam Hartman. But you really got too cute on the one in the third quarter where you're trying to play hurry up, which in the end, all that did was let Tommy Eichenberg know exactly when to jump.
I'm watching that live, and I'm like, why are they in such – like, what? Slow down. Like, you're Notre Dame. Like, yeah. You got this.
I mean, it's like – so this is something that – like, I'll be writing about this tomorrow in The Athletic, but this is something – we talked to Jared Parker during the week, and he was asked about, like, trying to get too cute or trying to do too much. And he said, like, look, There are times, this is his quote, there are times when you remember where you walk out the field and you're just like, if we just ran our base, whatever this is, it would have gone better. And those are bad feelings. In a way, we've got to be smart. So I think it's a blend of attack and believe what you're going to do and enough of having the guys to make our plays work. But it's, you know, the fact that he already talked about like what happens when you get too cute or you outthink yourself or outscheme yourself. Like, to me, that's what happened in those two moments. Notre Dame didn't play to its biggest strength because they thought they could find something smarter, and ultimately it blew up both times.
Didn't understand it on those two plays alone. I didn't understand it within the context of the game where, again, Ohio State's defense had a lot to do with this, so I'm not, like, saying take it away from them, but, like, it's not like Notre Dame played like they have a six-year potential All-American quarterback tonight. Like, they ran the ball a lot, except in key situations, which is what makes it doubly frustrating, if you ask me. Like, I have a hard time understanding that. You know, we talked about this earlier. You know, you watch this game and you come out saying, yeah, Notre Dame's, you know, they'll probably have to scratch and claw to get to 10 wins now because this was one that they should have won and that would have taken them a long way. And not to turn this into a larger conversation, but, like, this is when Freeman got hired and when the playoff got announced expanding to 12, I said this is going to be the best thing ever for Notre Dame because Freeman's going to recruit better than Kelly did. Who knows if he'll win as many games as he did, but when there are 12 teams in there, you can lose one, maybe even two at Notre Dame, and you're still going to get in. And when you get in those battles against big teams like Ohio State in the playoff, you're going to have the horses to win some of those games. And tonight was kind of validating in that regard, you know, in the wrong way. Again, like 11-1 Notre Dame, will they make the playoff? Will they not? We've seen Notre Dame teams that didn't and that probably wouldn't. I think it takes a lot. Again, who knows what the hell is going to happen elsewhere throughout the rest of the season, but, you know, not being in a conference for a 4-team playoff hurts you because the conference champion is going to get the benefit of the doubt. Notre Dame will never get the benefit of the doubt. And again, it would be a shame if it came down to 11-1 Notre Dame being left out because of this game, but in the future, like it's you're laughing at the comment. I assume that just came. Okay. That's what I thought too. I thought maybe you're laughing at me, but I saw the same thing. In the future, like, this loss is devastating, but not as devastating, not to minimize it, if that makes sense. Like, it's not your season's over. Like, now, they can win out.
It would have been less devastating if they had lost 24-17.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way that you lost makes it extra devastating because you were right. There will be games where you don't play very well and you lose by 10 points because you didn't play very well. Like, Notre Dame didn't play very well tonight, and they lost by 3 to Ohio State. That's insane to me that happened. But that's
– I wouldn't – I don't know if I'd say they didn't play well. I mean
– Yeah, I mean, they played
to the game. Like, this was – that. It's like saying Ohio State didn't play well against Notre Dame last year. It's like, well, if you watch the way that game flowed, they played the game that was presented to them.
The approach that Notre Dame had was the right one. The way that they were wired – and they took the field was correct. The environment was awesome, like you said. They did a lot of things really well tonight, but then they lost the moments of the game. Like, I don't know how many games or how many plays were in this game. Total plays, there were 129 plays in this game. Notre Dame played winning football probably for like 124 of them. But the five that they didn't were devastating. It wasn't, and it's like, it's one thing, like, when you give up the 65-yard run to Travion Henderson, like, that happens in a football game. Sometimes they block it better than you can tackle it. Sometimes you miss a tackle. Sometimes Marvin Harrison makes an incredible catch. Like, that's okay. But those fourth down calls on offense were bad. And then the end of the game is inexplicable. So it's that's, I think, what makes it incredibly difficult for Notre Dame to process. It's like the game was right there and all you had to do was do your job and you would have won it. You didn't, this game required no superhuman effort for Notre Dame to win it, which, like, in the past against Ohio State, you're thinking, like, last year, like, that game required superhuman effort for Notre Dame
to win. This required superhuman choking at the most important just point of the game. Like, there's no other way around it. Like, I can't.
You had to count to 11.
I don't want to be harsh on these guys because they're all very nice. And, you know, Freeman is as empty as his answer was. Like, he's as again, to compare him to his predecessor, he handles these things a lot better with the camera in his face than most do. And you can only imagine how Ryan Day would have handled this loss based on how he handled this win. But, like, there's just no logical explanation for grown men making millions of dollars to have brain freezes like that in the biggest games of their lives. Like, I know it happens, but that's just really, really hard to wrap your hands around if you're a Notre Dame fan. I mean, you're talking about the stats. I mean, I'm looking at it now because, again, this is a game where, like, you remember the plays more than the numbers. It is remarkable how close this game was. I mean, Ohio State outgains Notre Dame 366 to 351. They run one more play than Notre Dame. They average 1/10 of a yard more per play, 5.6 to 5.5. Neither team turns it over. Both teams get just two TFLs. Notre Dame got one sack. Ohio State got none. Although, again, both quarterbacks were under pressure all night. The one difference, of course, Notre Dame ran the ball 39 times, threw it 25. Ohio State ran the ball 27 times, threw it 38 times.
That's because Ohio State's a little bit more of a finesse team, Matt, which perhaps leads us into the question from Rick. Why is Ryan Day so insecure about the comments made by an 86-year-old man?
You know, Rick, that's a great question. Again, Ryan Day's got the job and record that everyone outside of Kirby Smart would kill for right now, and yet it's a fair question based on his posting comments. You go back to 2 years ago when he loses to Michigan, and you know Jim Harbaugh just hit the nerve of all nerves when he said some people are born on third base and act like they hit a triple. And because it's Jim Harbaugh, and because it's Michigan, and because it's the game, like, that's your label. And you are going to wear that label until you beat Michigan or win a big game. And instead, you spend the whole year prepping for Michigan, get smoked by them in your backyard. And, you know, even like last year, I was in the Ohio State post game last, and I didn't see the clips. I saw the NBC clip tonight. I did not, even my mother texted me, stayed up watching, said, man, that Ohio State coach seemed really pumped. What the hell did Lou Holtz say to grind his gears? I was in the post game last year for the Ohio State game, and he had a theme to that press conference, which was, you know, we wanted to prove we were more than a finesse team. You know, we wanted to out physical Notre Dame. We wanted to know we couldn't just score our way out of problems all the time. It was almost okay. Like I remember by the end of the year, I was covering their game at Northwestern where they won 21-7, and Northwestern won one game last year and was terrible, and the weather was terrible, but they had trouble running the ball against Northwestern. That was a November game. And I remember turning to, I think it was Doug LaMaurice who covers the team, and I'm like, how are they going to beat Michigan if they can't run the ball? And he's like, if I'm them, why are they even trying? Like, you've got the best receivers in the country. You've got the best quarterback in the country. Just play your game. Stop trying to prove something that you're not. Like, it's not going to get you anywhere. And even, like, I actually felt as good as you could possibly feel about a defense in the position Notre Dame was in once Ohio State got into, like, whatever it was, the 1 yard line. Like, there's so much more pressure on Ohio State in that situation because of the way this game played, because of what happened, that, like, I genuinely thought, and then I see them line up in shotgun on the final play. Like, I knew they were going to throw on first down. That was the most predictable thing in the world. I genuinely thought Notre Dame would stop them, which, you know, you don't feel that way about a defense in that situation 9 times out of 10, but because, like, Ohio State can't just beat you over the top or run some crazy play with their crazy talent at skill, and they got to actually earn it. I'm like, here we go. This is Notre Dame's ball. Roll your sleeves up, punch them in the mouth, and finish the game off the way you have forever. And shit, if they had 11 players on the field, they probably would have.
Yeah. That's right. I don't think Ohio State was prepared to score against Notre Dame with 11 men on the field. They ran right over a hole where Notre Dame was missing a player and scored by an inch. Ohio State is not a tough team, in the way that Ryan Day thinks that they are. If they had to play Michigan next week, I think it would look exactly like it did last year or the year before. But again, that's, for Notre Dame, that's like cold comfort because this team was just there to be beaten. This was the Ohio State team you're supposed to take down. Like, I think we talked about it in our live show in Chicago, ESQ on Thursday. The days kind of run together, but kind of like a, if not now, when? Like, that's because the Ohio State was exactly who you thought they were. Like, they were there to be got if you're Notre Dame, and you just couldn't get 11 guys on the field to finish the job, which is just, it is such a jagged, tough pill to swallow if you're Notre Dame.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it just, it heightens everything around them. It heightens, you know, again, Duke's a hell of a football team. Like, yeah, Notre Dame's favored. I'm sure they're favored if it's out already. And they will be favored and they should win. But going to College game day, you know, for as much, like, Notre Dame could not have asked for a better weekend in the lead up to the game, right? Like, Pat McAfee shows there. They've got Estime on. They've got Lou on. Freeman, like, just a great, great showcase for Notre Dame. Frankly, especially McAfee there, just a whole new audience, I think. It's like looking at Notre Dame and thinking, like, oh, wait, this isn't like,
yeah,
this, you know, like a modern, stale, stiff school that I grew up, yeah, my parents grew up
it's
with.
Like the Notre Dame that, like, if you cover Notre Dame, you sort of knew Notre Dame was trending this way with Marcus Freeman last year, but because they lost the first two games of the year, right, no one was paying attention. Everyone was paying attention this week.
No, and it was great.
And I think Notre Dame gave a great show of themselves.
And yet, next week's game day at Duke. And I don't know, again, when you're the road team, you're not going to be on set as much, if at all, and it's going to be all about Duke, but like, it's, you don't think they're going to spend a good chunk of that Friday and Saturday questioning Notre Dame and their competence because of the way they just completely gave it away tonight with on a,
yep,
I'll say similar stage because they both have game day, but on a bigger stage, like it just does not make sense. And I think they have the talent and the character in that locker room to not let this beat them twice, but you know, it's a lot easier said than done. It's
no question.
When you know you're better than the other team, that's, yeah. I talked to someone on Indiana staff last week after they lost to Louisville by 7, and we were talking about this, that, and the other. And he said, you know what? Like, we played our ass off against Ohio State. We lost them by 20. I was never prouder of my kids. Like, they did everything humanly possible. Like, we got beat. They're better than us, plain and simple. He's like, Louisville game's going to haunt me because we just played so bad for the first half. And like, it's like, those are the ones as coaches, you just, that stick with you when you know you had them. And this is one of those. And Freeman got asked a question similar in nature about, like, did you outplaying them for most of the night make this that much tougher to swallow? And he said, he did say, like, all due respect, like, Ohio State played great. They're a great team, but like, we feel like we beat ourselves in this one, and they did.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's a coaching cliche reach on his part to go that way. This question from David, it wasn't just the ending. It was the consistently bad coaching from the start. You went and got a quarterback and then didn't let him play quarterback until the end, even though Ohio State was in base defense all game to stop the run. And then you did let him, and you scored. I don't know if it's a question from David as much as a complaint, but I didn't have an issue with how they used Hartman tonight other than the QB runs, which are both huge issues. But I thought the passing game, quicker, fewer deep shots, focused on Mitchell Evans. I thought it was well put together. Because I don't think Notre Dame was confident going into the game that they could keep Sam Hartman upright if they were taking more deep shots, because I'm not sure they felt or believed they could protect him.
I think he averaged 38 passes a game last year for Wake, and he was averaging 23 coming into tonight for Notre Dame. It's one of those games where if I didn't watch and I saw the box score, I'd say, why didn't you use him more? Like, he's a really good QB. Like, why didn't you let him air it out more? Watching the game and the flow of the game, it was weird, especially in the first half, because they got shut out in the first half. And I, you know, without looking at the score, just watching the game and feeling the game play out, I'm thinking, you know, this Ohio State defense seems bend but don't break. Like, Notre Dame moved the ball on them pretty fine. Yep. Like, it wasn't electric. It wasn't sexy. But they moved the ball, and they just, you know, shot themselves in the foot, whether it was a missed field goal, two missed fourth downs. So they moved the ball pretty effectively. And because of that, like, it's hard to look at that game plan and say it was a failure. Like, they played to their strengths, and they put, they put themselves in position to win the game.
Yeah. I mean, it gets back to the point I made earlier. There were 129 plays in the game. I think Notre Dame played 124 of them really well. It just that they blew their own foot. Like, it was self-immolation. They lit themselves on fire for five plays. And that made the difference, because you cannot have – you can have mistakes. You can't have catastrophic mistakes like Notre Dame had on those.
Can't have mental mistakes. Was it the guard on – I think it was the guard on Ohio State, one of their offensive linemen, took back a 30-15.
Yeah.
No, he took – well, it was the hands – I mean, was he just beat the living crap out of Jalen Snead after the play when they completed a 3rd-and-15 in the third quarter. And that set Ohio State back. They give the ball up. Notre Dame goes down and scores. And, like, that was like, the one when I'm like, oh, big mistakes are going to decide this game. Like,
yeah.
Ohio State's offensive line, you know, pre- and post-snap penalties, those are the ones that really get you if you're a fan or a coach. That last offensive drive is going to stick with me even more than that last defensive drive. You know, that was the one that won the
with
game.
The
like, that
pass.
Was screen pass and just not being able to put them away.
Yeah, I mean, I turned to one of our colleagues before second down. I was like, they got to run it here, right? They got to run it here. Because, like, what happens if they run it there? I realize the game doesn't play out maybe exactly the same way. Ohio State doesn't have the timeout to call after the touchdown grounding call. So down to 5 seconds.
I forgot about that play, right? I mean, that's
– yeah.
Talk about a gift from the football gods. I mean, Notre Dame earned that one, but, like
– yeah. It just
it's
inexplicable that the number of moments in this game where they had them exactly where they wanted them and then just lit themselves on fire. It's inexplicable to me. I'm trying to think of a game, and I'm sure people who listen to this podcast tomorrow with more of a clear head than perhaps either you or I have right now. I can't think of a game like this.
Now, our old colleague, Andy Staples, who was just recording his podcast one door over from me, turned to me at the end when it looked like they were going to win and said, what's the biggest win? Biggest win since when? And he said, Oklahoma 2012, right? And I said, yeah, probably, off the top of my head.
At least.
At least. But again, that we were having that conversation on the field, and we were on the field for the final few plays, so tells you where our mindset was. Like, people from Notre Dame staff are coming up to us, at least they came up to me and said, hey, when they're, you know, if there's a field, and they weren't saying this out of arrogance, they were saying it, doing their jobs preparing, but it was like, hey, if they do storm the field, like, just go up to the media room through that tunnel right there, like, mm-hmm. you know, protect yourself, like, there are boundaries that you can obviously break, but, like, again, that shows you, like, that gives you a feel for, like,
it felt like it was going to happen.
Yeah, it absolutely felt like it was going to happen. Yeah. At no point in my mind, and I don't say this out of an abundance of overconfidence, but no point in my mind from the time Ohio State got stopped on fourth down on their second to last drive, at no point did I think Notre Dame was losing this game.
Yep.
I'm no point. You. Never even – it never even crossed my mind. I thought, you know, hey, you know, even when they got the ball back, I thought, yeah, there hasn't been a turnover yet this game. They're going to get one. They've been getting pressure on McCord all night. He's finally going to cough it up. He damn near did to DJ Brown. And, you know, every great game like this has a couple plays like that that you look back on and think, what if? But, I forgot about the grounding penalty when you said that. And, yeah, that timeout proved to be very, very big then. I mean, it's hard to look, you know, independent of the coaching on the last two plays, there's no shame in not being able to stop someone from the 1 yard line, especially a team as good as Ohio State. Like, if they lost with 11 men on the field with that play, we're still saying Notre Dame should have won this game. It's a shame they
didn't.
But
we're saying Ohio State made a play.
Yeah. We're saying Ohio State, exactly. We're saying Ohio State made a play and, like, made a number of plays on that final drive that, you know, I don't think anyone looked at this Notre Dame defense coming into the season as this elite group. Like, they had a chance to be pretty damn good, and they've proven to be pretty damn good so far. And tonight they were really freaking good for 58 minutes or so. But it wasn't again, I might contradict myself here because I thought they were going to win this game, but that said more, I think, about Ohio State's offense and Notre Dame's defense. It wasn't like, oh, well, 2 minutes against this defense, like, good luck. Like, it was all right. They've been doing it all night. They'll probably do it again.
That's why you had to run the ball on second down.
Yep.
Because Kyle McCord was not going to drive it 65 yards or 70 yards or however long they had to go on that.
And not only throw it, but to throw it in such a risky play.
Yeah, it's like, I get why it feels not risky because it's just a screen pass. But
Sawyer almost had one of those in the first quarter, though. I mean, like,
yeah, that's a good
point.
Those linemen
were in their face. Yeah. They were in Parkman's face all night.
Regardless, you should have run it.
Yes.
You know, there's, and I do, like, I don't want this podcast to end without addressing, like, the atmosphere, the green-red breakdown that we saw tonight, because I wrote about it this week. I could not believe the reaction to that story.
You're welcome, by the way, for the New York, for the New York Times.
Exactly. Thanks for the New York Times hard copy. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I thought the Notre Dame's fan base was outstanding. Like, as good a performance from a fan base as I can remember here. Like, maybe USC 05. Like, I was really, really impressed both how loud it was and how much green was in here. I thought Notre Dame, like, I'm waving my arms and, like, the whole Notre Dame thing here, like, they killed it tonight.
Awesome atmosphere.
In terms of setting up the atmosphere.
Loudest crowd I've seen here, easily. Like, I don't, like, I thought Ohio State, again, I get why you want to guard against Georgia, and reading your story, which was terrific. You certainly saw why there was the potential for that and why you would fear that if you're a Notre Dame fan. I saw a lot more red, I feel like, coming in. I came in relatively late because I didn't have to deal with a whole lot of traffic that way. And I, you know, spent some time in the tailgate lots, and I saw a lot more red than maybe I expected coming into this. And look, their Ohio State fans are loud and rowdy. Like, you heard them loud and clear on big Ohio State plays. But I thought if you don't compare it to, like, some of the disasters Notre Dame's experienced before, Nebraska and Georgia, and you just look at it as, like, a giant college football game with one good team visiting another, you're like, yeah, that's how it should be. Like,
Ohio State's you wouldn't have thought anything of it, right?
Like, no, like, but, like, you think, yeah, like, Ohio State's right there with Notre Dame, among the biggest fan bases in the country, and they've got a very distinct color. Like, they're going to travel in big numbers. It's an easy drive for them. Like, it's what you would expect under normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. And again, you heard them. You heard their band. You heard, like, it's. You know, I stayed on and lingered a little bit just to see Ryan Day and the guys come off the field. And I mean, there was the one pocket of visiting fans was not that big. There was enough red scattered throughout, and you really heard it, of course, when they won at the end behind us, not too far from the student section, which, by the way, completely full. More than a half hour before kickoff. I don't know if I've ever seen that anywhere. That was awesome. It was a great atmosphere all around. I mean, there's you could bottle this up and have it for every game. I mean, what's the next home game here? Is it USC?
USC.
All right, well, yeah, so that'll be sick too. It won't be as good as this because you see USC all the time.
Yeah, but, I mean, look, as long as Notre Dame is 6-1 6-1? I got my math right.
Is Drew Pine beating USC right now? I don't know what's going on.
No, I was saying if Notre Dame was 6-1, right?
I know, like, I'm just saying it. It's 24-21 USC in the third quarter. Go on.
Oh, my goodness.
35 point spread. Go on.
It, like, Notre Dame absolutely has to win that game.
The USC game or this game?
Yeah, the USC game.
Oh.
They have to win that game. I don't see how the season would feel fulfilling in any way if you lost both your big home games. In a year when you have Sam Hartman, like, I think it would be hard to go 10-2 this year at this point. Like, let's say they lost to USC and then won the other six. I think you would still feel like, man, that was a playoff team that just spit the bet.
15 is when you said that. 15 when you said that, because that was a team that. We, you know, should they have beaten Clemson? I don't know. They're in position to beat Clemson. They didn't show up for a half, and we saw what that Clemson team ended up doing that year. I will say again, that was the most injury-rattled team I've ever seen from Notre Dame, and they lose at the end to Stanford the way they do, and we see what Stanford does in the Rose Bowl. And
they lost to two top five teams by what, like a combined 7 points or something?
Four points. On the last play of the game. And I had a conversation with someone from that defense a couple weeks ago who said, oh, yeah, remember that game when Brian Van Gorder called a play we hadn't run all year on the biggest play of the game against Stanford? Yeah. That worked out well for us. And I said, yeah, I remember. I'm sure you do too.
That would fall under the trying to do too much.
Yes. I don't. in a weird, like, psychological way. Like, I don't, obviously USC's a must win. It's a rivalry game. It's a game you ought to win. I don't look at it as like a must because they lost this. Like they're playing for something less the rest of the way. That's not to say they can't.
Right.
With perfection. It's like if USC smokes Colorado next week, no one's going to care because Colorado just got smoked by Oregon. And that was a game where it's like, oh, hey, see, Colorado's not that good. Like,
yeah,
if you're Notre Dame and you're in the 14 playoff era, which you still are, like you pretty much have to go perfect, which makes every game a big game, especially when you have an environment like this one. And again, USC will be a great environment. It'll be a great showcase. I don't think we're going to be talking about two Heisman candidates in that game, but maybe we will if Sam Hartman lights up the next 3 weeks. I don't think, one, because it's a team that comes here every other year, and two, because you lost to Ohio State. And Notre Dame fans can do everything exactly the same that they did tonight for the USC game. It's not going to be as cool of an environment just because, like, it would be impossible to replicate what happened tonight from an environment standpoint. Like, this was a totally special once every maybe decade kind of environment that you get here. So I don't know if it makes it, like, I'm not saying it doesn't make it a big game. It's still a big game. I just think, like, you know, this game is going to color the rest of the season. It just is. You know, and you said unfulfilling 10-2. I'm trying to think, short of perfect regular seasons, I mean, most non-perfect seasons are unfulfilling. Maybe 2021, 11-1, because we didn't see that coming.
I really disagree, because I think that 2015, 2021 would be one that felt a little unfulfilling. 2019.
Oh no, I'd say 21 was 21 was 11-1. I'd say that was fulfilling.
Okay.
Because we didn't think.
You know, I'm thinking 2019. 2019 when 19, they went
that was unfulfilling.
You're just like 2006. They went 10-3. It felt very empty, even though it was better than the year before when they went 9-3, and that felt very, like, I think, uplifting for the Notre Dame fan base in 2005. So it's like, there are a lot of different vibes and sentiments that come out of, like, how the team plays that are independent of the record. If you beat USC, I said at the beginning of the year, I still feel this way, is that Notre Dame needed to have one loss going to Clemson in November, and then you take your chances down there. That's still very much in play for this team. But bouncing back from this will be very difficult. You know, I don't know if there's any anything to be said from the fact that they bounced back from Marshall and bounced back from Stanford fairly impressively last year.
We could say that, but if they lost to Stanford, I mean, did they really bounce back from Marshall that well?
Yeah, it's a fair point. Fair point. It's just that they played well the next 2 weeks, UNC and BYU. They did that. They should handle Duke and Louisville.
They played terrible against Cal the week before, like, for their first win.
Yeah. Yes. So there's a lot, man, there's just a lot out there for Notre Dame still, but, like, a lot to get sorted out. And this is kind of one of those games that's going to leave a mark that doesn't really go away for the coaching staff, not just this season, but for however long the staff is together. So that's my last take on this game, Matt. I'll let you have the last word if you've got one.
Yeah, no, I'll just echo what you said. I mean, you know, fulfilling, unfulfilling, reasonable minds can differ on that. But I would say 21 was the 11-1 year where they lost Kelly that year, but, like, they overachieved. Like, we didn't. I remember doing the post-game Stanford pod with you, and we were like, they might make the freaking playoff if everything breaks right for them, and they damn near did.
That's true. Yeah, good point.
Which is pretty crazy, and they would have been doing it with a new head coach. You beat USC at home and the Heisman winner, who looks like he might do it again this year. Like, that's not nothing. You go 11-1, that's not nothing. To bring everything back to the Bush push, this Ohio State team clearly is not that USC dynasty, but I do think this will, like, if Ohio State makes the playoff this year, this will be the game all the national highlight shows show as the turning point and how they, you know, use this as a building block to then beat Wisconsin and Penn State and Michigan and whoever. And I think that's where it hurts too. You know, it was a big game. There are a lot of implications for both teams. One of these teams escaped her the win that probably shouldn't, and now they've got everything in the world in front of them. And now if you're Notre Dame, it's just kind of like, what's next? And again, the season's not over. It's not lost. But damned if it doesn't feel that way, you know, at I think I'm on Central Time on my computer. No, I'm at Eastern Time. 1:11 Eastern Time. My phone's at 12:11. 1:11 Eastern Time on the 24th of September. It's Sam Hartman said, it's dark, and that's college football sometimes. And I think that kind of best summarizes tonight for Notre Dame.
No doubt. All right. Well, we'll leave it there on this live post-game reaction pod that probably covered about 10% of the game because, man, there was a lot to pick apart. But we'll be back next week with another episode of The Independent, looking ahead to Duke and Order and the rest of Notre Dame season. But that's it from early Sunday morning here at top Notre Dame Stadium after Ohio State's 17-14 win over Notre Dame.